Wild Talk Radio Network.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is Rex Black with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
Sunday night, and you know what that means. It's time for another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Streaming live at wildtalkradio.com and twitch.tv/WTRLive. It is 23 hours since Extreme Rules happened. Because we're not on after the show, we're just a day later. Here to talk all about it, we have Keishi Matsunaga.
Hello.
Hello.
I watched the pay-per-view from my telephone.
Was that a great viewing experience?
I mean, it wasn't the worst experience I've had watching an event. So, yeah.
Well, it's not scrambled vision, so I guess that's a step up.
Yes, I didn't have any, like, there was no, you know, lag or anything. My feed was pretty good. It was just, you know, small.
Small.
That's okay.
I mean, that's fine.
So did I maybe miss subtle things that others may pick up on? Possibly.
We'll find out. We're going to find out here in a little bit. We have the intern, King Kittens.
I want to talk about the thing. I want to talk about the thing.
No.
Yes.
No.
We're going to talk about the thing.
Not yet, though.
Right.
No. We got to talk about the thing.
What thing?
What did Gritty and Dexter do when they left together? That's what I want to know.
That's the thing?
It's one of the things. But that you have a sociopath and Dexter Loomis going out into Philadelphia together at God only knows what point of the night.
I mean,
shit happened.
If Monday Night Raw and Edmonton taught us anything, they probably went to play hockey.
No, someone else brought out the hockey stick. We saw that.
There are many a strip club they could have gone to.
If that is what they did, I know what happened was Dexter is sitting off at the side watching while Gritty is getting a lap dance.
No, Gritty's the one giving the lap dance because it's Gritty.
I envision it being like the end of the first Avengers movie and they're just sitting in a small little restaurant somewhere eating Philly cheesesteaks together.
Just in silence.
For bitches.
Yeah. Because, I mean, neither of them talk, so it would be perfect.
Tim yelled something. Couldn't make it out. What, you yelled, Tim?
They went trolling for bitches.
And that's the one and only Tim Stein.
Hi, everybody. How are you? Happy Canadian Thanksgiving to all the Canadians. And one day in advance to the Americans, Happy Columbus Day. What exactly does that entail?
The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
Feeling immense shame.
Do you, like, go around into other people's closets telling them you're looking for the New World?
Not quite, no.
Christopher Columbus, what are you doing in my closet? I'm looking for the New World. Anyway, never mind. You won't get it.
Wow.
What the hell was that? I'm not telling you. It's a secret.
Good. Keep it to yourself.
I don't have my English to Tim dictionary ready. I'm sorry.
Yeah. We're not there right now. Hi, everybody. We're here to talk about Extreme Rules, which happened last night, and I avoided the traffic on the way home right here in Philadelphia.
It was last night or possibly this morning if you had other events going on last night and had to try and stay away from certain things.
Oh, I stayed away from it all, except for I got spoiled on one thing. That's it, one thing.
Oh, no. I think we all were trying to find one thing.
No, but you don't have no idea what I was spoiled on, but I was spoiled on one thing and it had no effect on the show.
Okay. It was gritty.
It was not gritty. I hadn't heard nothing about gritty. No. No, I distracted myself on the way home and did not go on Twitter once. I was proud of myself.
I would hope so. Isn't that like distracted driving?
I was not the one driving. I was in the back.
No.
I was just along for the ride. Anyway,
were you trolling for bitches?
Not trolling for bitches. That was gritty.
Casey, point.
Wait. Did Brock run into Gritty and Dexter and go trolling for bitches? Is that what I'm hearing?
Cannot confirm that.
nor is he denying it, though. We're just going to put... We're not saying no, but we're not saying yes. So leave that up to your imagination, folks.
All I'm going to say is that because of everything going on with Hockey Canada up here in Canada, I'm staying away from that trolling for bitches quote that Casey's fallen in love with.
Hey, consent is fine.
Anywho, let's get into the show.
How did we get here?
Hi, Rock. How are you? Did you watch the pay-per-view last night?
There was a
WWE Premium live event that took place.
It did. It took
in
place
Philadelphia.
In my city. And I watched it this morning at 9 a.m.
Oh.
You know, bright and early, watch the pay-per-view.
Okay. Well, right off the bat, Casey, on your little small itty-bitty portable media player that you had, that I think you called it a telephone?
Yes.
Weird. Anyway.
Tim, just to let you know, in the future, you can be able to watch things on your phone because the phone doesn't flip up. I'm just going to let you know that.
I don't have a phone that flips up. Mine is a candy bar phone. It's a Samsung Galaxy.
Right.
It's one of those things that thinks it's not so stupid. Anyway,
Brent,
back to what I was saying.
Hold on, Tim. Brent,
what?
In 2022, phones again flip. We have we have flip phones again, but you can watch things on them now. They're flip phones.
I didn't know if a can could open up and not pinch the string. I'm sorry.
No, we have flip phones now. They're very very smart now.
Yeah, you do what you can to stay away from those things. They're overpriced, and they're really, really bad, and they break really easy.
Especially around Tom Brady.
How do you know that, Tim? Don't ask. Back to what I was saying. Casey, concerning the pay-per-view that you watched on your texting device last night or today or whenever you watched it.
It was last night after about 30 or 40 trips down a water slide.
Okay, there you go. Did you catch the whole pay-per-view except for the opening monologue that we call the pre-show?
Yes, I did not catch the pre-show, but I was on the network, which we still get up here in Canada, and I watched the whole thing.
Yes, we do. Okay, so in your opinion, just to kick off right at the outset, what was your vote for weakest match on the card?
Why would you start with the worst, Tim?
Because you build up.
I don't know. I enjoyed the whole thing.
It's hard to pick it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right? That's exactly my point. Brent, did you have one that you could refer to as the weakest match?
I wouldn't say it's the weakest. I would say of all of them, maybe the strap match is something where I was like, in comparison to everything else, it may be graded just a tiny bit lower, but everything is getting graded definitely in a passing sense, if not getting stellar grades, because holy shit, this entire pay-per-view from top to bottom.
I was kind of surprised that you would have gone to the strap match, but let me ask you, What was your match of the night?
Oh, God.
Good luck.
I really liked the psychology of Imperium and Brutes in the Donnybrook match.
Yep.
The ladder match just showed me that Bianca Belair is just stratospheres above other people in terms of talent, including the men's roster at points.
She and Bailey pulled something out last night, didn't they?
Pulled it out, threw it down, it was just all over.
And geared everybody else to pick it up, yeah.
The I Quit match was really well done.
Yep.
And someone is going to die from it moving forward. We'll cover in a little bit.
We will talk about that in just a bit, yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to nail down just one because there are so many things that happened across the matches that were good in those particular matches that it's like, if I'm looking for one thing, it's this. If I'm looking for another thing, it's this. Just overall, I can't honestly pick a favorite because they're just all damn good.
Okay, and the same question to you, Keish.
I don't know. I really enjoyed everything. I can't really pick one over anything else. I mean,
okay,
everybody kind of like took the stipulation, quote unquote, they had, and I let everybody did a good job with it.
Yeah.
Well, in the build to all of this, all of those stipulations made sense. It wasn't like we're forcing a strap match.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's part of the reason why it was so enjoyable is like everything that was done for a good reason. It all made sense to have these stipulations in these matches. The builds were good, and I thought the execution worked along with everything else. I thought it was all in all very, very well put together, flushed out, and executed very well.
Yeah, the reason why I threw both those questions at you guys, we talked last week when we were previewing it, how strong a card this seemed to be on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And how none of us really stated it out loud, but there was a slight undercurrent worry that it might not live up to the hype that it delivered.
Oh, no. It delivered.
I can unequivocally say that it lived up to the hype. And yeah, this is the best pay-per-view from top to bottom overall that we've had in a long time. I mean, we've had stellar pay-per-views where we could pick out a match we decided sucked in comparison to the others. We've had pay-per-views where, that one particular match made the entire goddamn show. You can't do that with this one, guys.
Well, and the thing is I know people have said like, this is Hunter's like first real pay-per-view, even though some of them may not count Clash at the Castle because it's kind of a special one-off.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since Hunter took over, the product has elevated to a completely different level.
Shit has made a lot more sense, wouldn't you say?
It's made sense. People have, you know, like, they've got direction where at times you're sitting there wondering, like, where are we even going to go from week to week? Now, Raw, you can see movement from people, and you know, you can tell, okay, this guy, they're wanting, you know, they want to do stuff with a lot of people and they want to make stories matter, even if, and I hate to quote this person, but it's one of those things, like, you know, when Russo booked, he would try to have stories for a lot of people down the full card, and we're starting to see some of that here with this, where it's like we only had six matches, but there are six great matches, and even still there's elements that were touched on during the show that tie to other stories. Even if they don't have a match, it still advances it, like Miz and Dexter.
Yeah,
that was something that ran through the entire, it wasn't just one segment, but it's stuff that was the entire pay-per-view. And then they're tying in, you know, Johnny and Austin because that's on the show tomorrow, but they're getting you interested in being like, ooh, that's tomorrow, and then there's a U.S. title, I have to watch this show now.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot to carry things forward and get you invested and get you like actively salivating for like, okay, after this show, I can't wait for next week. Whereas before it would be like Raw hits and you go, oh yeah, there's going to be another one and I have no clue what's going to happen.
They have long-term booking.
Oh God, yes.
They've hired a long-term like creative person where it's like
somebody who has vision.
Yeah.
And is looking down the road.
That are going to keep them focused on those long-term goals.
And we had part of that long-term booking payoff last night in such a glorious way.
We did.
We're getting there. We're getting there. If you were directing, we think you're directing?
Uh-huh.
hell yeah, I want to talk about that. I absolutely want to be talking about that because I'm salivating at that potential match.
So let's get into... go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, for people wondering... what I'm talking about, what I'm leading up to. Just wait. It'll come.
So let's get into...
We're building up to, you know?
You're building anticipation, suspense. You're
there you go.
Doing the whole thing. So it kicked off with the Donnybrook, the Brawling Brutes, Imperium, and go.
Jesus Christ. This was... If you want to if you want to talk about Donnybrooks and being like extreme rules matches and just anything kind of goes, this is the match to show it.
Well, you couldn't have picked a better match on the card, seriously, to open this pay-per-view.
It was so great because Imperium has that mentality of being, you know, the ring generals and not wanting to lower themselves into using weapons. But the psychology of, like, they were picking one person and just absolutely trying to annihilate them. And then you move to the next person and do the same. So you're taking people out of the match in a way that it's not in a normal, like, multi-person match where it's like, okay, a couple guys powder and, you know, wait for their stuff. In this,
no,
it's
you
like,
take
oh,
them
no.
out one by one.
Yeah, they you know, laid out Sheamus after the bar spot and... It's believable that it's like, yeah, he's still laying over there because he got annihilated. Okay, now we're going to move to Ridge Holland. Boom. Take him out for a few minutes. And then when Butch is there, it's just like, he's the little rabid Wolverine who could, but it made sense of like, okay, yeah, now we're going to focus on him. And then if other people start to come back, it, you know, it made logical sense. It was fascinating to watch how that kind of came through. And the amazing thing is when the Brutes came out, when did they officially become face? Cause I know we've seen it in the crowd a little bit. They've started to get behind Sheamus in this group. But when they walked out that night, the crowd went nuts.
Clash at the Castle. That was their turn.
Okay. Because, I mean, like I said, they got a hero's ovation coming out, and every time they started to rise up, everyone got behind them. It was incredible to see and hear. And, yeah, this match was just brutal, but beautiful.
Great fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was chaotic and organized all at the same time.
I love the picture of Sheamus's, like, ancestor on the bar. Did you catch that shot?
Yeah, and then they cleared that bar, and all of a sudden, like, how dare you throw the picture of my great, great, great something? He just gets angry. My photo, no!
But yeah, the other thing is there was innovative ways to use the weapons that they had. So it's like, with the shillelagh, it's like, yeah, you can hit someone with them. But when they set up, I think it was Ludwig in the corner, and so they hung him in the Tree of Woe, and then they used the shillelagh to, like, hold his neck back for the drop kick.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, that's new.
But yeah, no, I thought they did a good job, like, using, like, not using what everybody else was going to use later, but still managing to use foreign objects.
Yeah, and it was, like, the objects made sense when they were using them. It was, again, this was something where it's like, when they planned this out, it wasn't like, okay, yeah, we're going to use a chair for chair's reasons. It's like, okay, no, Pete's going to do the moonsault off the large barrels. Okay, that's really cool. They use the shillelaghs. Awesome.
Yeah, the highlight of the match, though, was every time Sheamus and Gunther squared off in the ring. And they went one-on-one, what, four separate times?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. And you just, if you didn't miss SmackDown, you got the importance of that one-on-one.
Yeah, it's the two leaders of the faction squaring off. And whenever they met, like you said, it added to the gravity of the match. It's like, sure, when you had Giovanni and Ludwig and Ridge and Butch all engaging, it's like, okay, cool. But when the two big guys, it's like, all right, so this is when some stuff's going to happen.
Like, don't take away, and I had no intentions of taking away from everybody else in the brouhaha that they called the Donnybrook. But it just, for me, it really tied nicely into SmackDown the night before. You know, you got Gunther bitching and complaining about using weapons, and it cheapens the purity of the sport and this, that, and the other thing. And then he goes and he wins by using a shillelagh when the ref's otherwise distracted. And they played that up last night.
And I like that they were highlighting the fact of, like, Sheamus is walking out and his chest was already showing the color from last night. So
still
it's
showing
just
the color from the night before, yeah.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, this started the night before. This was, you know, violent from what you saw. Now everyone's involved, and it's going to the next level. Yep. Sit back.
And it was like, if you thought Friday was something, wait till you see what we're about to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and it was hot. It was just the entire match.
And the thing is with Imperium losing here, it doesn't hurt them at all because they dominated through the match, but the Brutes as a unit were able to pull it out. So Imperium still looks strong, but the Brutes, you know, they got to fight in their match.
Yeah, I don't think either faction would have been hurt by a loss. But you're right. I don't think the Brutes would have suffered if they had taken the pin.
I would think they would have, just based on, because they would have been consecutive losses to them. But now they, especially after Sheamus losing on Friday, if they kept losing, it's kind of like feud. They're kind of on the downside of the feud. Now it kind of evens it back up a little.
Yeah, but, and this goes back to old school style booking. And we saw it last night, as a matter of fact. The one side keeps getting continually beat down. He's just losing momentum, and it's, every loss at every event is hurting him. And all of a sudden he pulls off a miraculous, a massive, major, incredible, explosive win.
And I'll say about
this. And we'll get to what I'm talking about afterwards.
And I'll say about this. This doesn't feel like that, what we used to talk about, the 50-50 booking, because even though Sheamus lost on Friday, it was, you know, a covered loss because everyone thought that Gunther had tapped, and then he wins via nefarious means. But again, for this, it's like, no, the Brutes got to come together, got their match, got their win, and it feels, I wouldn't say legitimate, but it's not something like, okay, yeah, they won here, it's 50-50. It's kind of like, with the way it's set up, you believe both sides or both wins, and you're kind of like, no, they would win in this case. That's how it would conceivably go, as opposed to just, oh no, he won, now it's time for him to win.
Because they've done a better job building the character, and or should say characters, rather than having the wins and losses matter. They've built all the characters strong enough, so, oh yeah, they took a loss. It doesn't matter because the characters are strong enough to take it either way.
Yeah.
So the Brawling Brutes. Go ahead.
And that was only match one.
Yeah, so it was only match one. The Brawling Brutes pick up the win. Believe next it was Extreme Rules for the SmackDown Women's Championship, Ronda Rousey and Liv Morgan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the second match, yeah. And this was, again, perfect placement for this match. If I had to pick a weakest match on the card, it would have been this one. But even then, it's difficult to say that. But slightly different style of match from what they opened up with, and it started the roller coaster for the crowd, ebb and flow.
Again, there was good psychology in this one, in the fact of building, like, Liv wanting to use the bat, because that's been the thing for the past, 2 weeks, is Liv proving that she can be, she can take it to the next level, be extreme. Because we all know Ronda, baddest woman on the planet. That's how she's been touted. She has that MMA background. But Liv has kind of not quite had to go to a point like this, and she's trying to show and trying to take it to that level. And so she has the bat. And I like at the very beginning, it's put in the corner and she tries to get it, and Ronda's just like, no, this isn't going to happen.
This felt...
If there was... What's that?
I was going to say, this more felt like a physical fight between two women rather than a straight wrestling.
Yeah. It was just what it should have felt like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you about to say something, Cash?
No, I was just agreeing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if there was any downside to this match at all, it was right after the table spot, which is leading right up to the finish. It got a little bit sloppy, a little messy.
She had trouble locking it in, I think.
Yeah.
So the one thing the announcers did all night was they knew what was coming. So they're overly trying to explain the situation. Like, they knew the finish and how it was laid out, because especially Cole, and he's trying to explain the finish of what's going on, but she's still having trouble executing it. Like, it happened in, like, the ladder match or something. Like, they know what's coming, what they're trying to do before it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Which kind of felt a little off, but, like, she was trying
to do something. The problem was she was having a hard time, a real hard-ass time getting her right foot over to lock it in.
Yeah.
And that's too bad. And it's because of Liv being so short.
her being short is also it's a different type of setup for a maneuver. Like, it was, I forget even what they called it, but it just, yeah. They were trying something. It could have come off better,
Well, didn't Cole actually say the word Kimura at one point?
I think it was one of the things she was trying, but that was not the actual finish.
That wasn't the actual submission hold. No,
it was a transition into what she was finally into the final form that she was trying to achieve.
Some sort of bicep finish. I don't remember the exact name off the top of my head. The bicep crusher.
Oh yeah, bicep. I remember that name.
That's what it was. She was trying to put in the bicep crusher, which I don't think anyone's heard of before last night.
No, to me, it looked like she was trying to sit on Liv's head.
You invented on the spot.
But they had a name for it, so.
But it was also the little subtle thing at the end of Rhonda using part of the broken table for it as well was a nice touch to try and add a tiny bit of leverage.
Yep. Well, and I mean, even though it wasn't, like, executed the smoothest, lots of times things like that aren't, so yeah. I didn't think it took a ton away, aside from the fact of, well, this is wrestling, it should be smooth, but if you want to come at it from a, this is less of a wrestling match and more of a fight standpoint, like, real-life fights don't go smooth, so...
You use whatever's at hand and to the best of its ability.
So Rhonda is now your SmackDown Women's Champion. Liv smiled as she passed out in pain. Good on her.
And she was happy when she woke up, too.
She was kind of laughing about that, and then I think they caught up to her backstage, and she was lurking in shadow. So, who knows what's next?
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Could be.
So, there you go. And we'll see what they do next with Rhonda.
Mm-hmm.
Believe the ladder match is next?
No, it's the strap match.
Oh, the strap match. Drew and Karrion strap match. Go.
I love the mind games from Karrion Kross right at the beginning. Oh, I'm not going to put that right on my screw.
I like him chucking it outside of the ring and then Scarlett just immediately grabbing it.
Yeah, that was good too. But the whole entire thing where the match doesn't officially start until that strap is locked in around Karrion's wrist. He's not having any part of it. Takes the advantage, thanks Scarlett, to beat down on Drew.
Mm-hmm.
And it even went out into the crowd before the match started, and they're beating each other back and forth in the crowd until finally that's it. They get back to ringside, and I forget what Drew did to drop Karrion, but you just like see the look in his face. Drew's had enough. Screw this. Give me that. And he slaps the strap around his wrist himself, and then the bell rings.
Yeah, it's just you're not getting away anymore. Like I'm tired of following you. I'm tired of this shit. Just it's going on. We're starting this now.
I was incredibly surprised nobody grabbed the strap when they were in the crowd. Or like stepped on it by accident and have like Drew be like, God damn.
I'm gonna kick it. Whoa, hang on.
Well, it was amazing in a couple of spots where the cameraman didn't wind up eating it because he was like 6 inches away from Drew in a few occasions, following them. Really this, made for some good close up TV shots.
This again, very good physical match.
Yep.
Like the carryover from, you know, what we've seen on TV with attacking Drew's shoulder and making that the focal point of this match, and Scarlett just being an absolute thorn in Drew's side.
Scarlett being a complete bitch at the end. That was great.
Well, just any time Drew was really getting that advantage, she would just interject a tiny bit just to get his attention, and then Karrion could come in.
Yeah.
Yep.
we got the two big meaty men slapping meat, but with the strap.
And slapping each other.
Two big meaty men strapping meat.
Okay, God. stop with that, because you're just sending out the wrong visuals.
By the end, they were meat.
Oh, man, that, like, slap exchange between the two of them, right? Holy.
Yeah, when they're smacking each other in the delt and in the side of the head with the strap, and the crowd lost it, because it's the punch spot that everyone loves, but they're using a leather strap to even march through with each other.
Karrion took a really good one upside the side of his head, neck, and left ear. I'm like, holy shit. I was just surprised that, like, he didn't wind up being split open by that strap with that shot.
Yeah, no one really got cut open in this match, but they were trying. God. Yeah, this match, it was good because Karrion looked the way he needed to.
Mm-hmm.
After, because this is, I want to say, his first full extended match that we've really seen him. We've seen, you know, him take on like Drew Gulak and, you know, a few other people, but it hasn't been a big contest since, you know, the time we shall not speak of Karrion Kross.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This finally had the feel of that big match.
Yeah. But now when you see Karrion Kross like for people that may have only watched the main roster and may have only seen, you know, Spartacus Kross and without Scarlett.
Yeah.
You wonder, like, what was the big deal about this guy? People are talking about him from NXT. I don't get it. You watch this match and you go, holy
shit. Now I get it.
This guy is a monster. And she is the perfect, you know, like, cuff for him to work together. This entire thing worked.
Pepper spray.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe I predicted Karrion Kross was going to win this due to nefarious means.
I believe so.
And I think nefarious activity, you know, like spraying Drew with pepper spray falls under that into that category.
The thing at the very end with the pepper spray that I liked as well, and it was very subtle, was Karrion reacting to the spray as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Drew gets sprayed in the face, and he's, like, incapacitated, as you expect. But Karrion, after the win, you can see, like, he's even kind of clawing at his face, and she's trying to wipe him, and it's just...
He's selling it like he got some of the back spray. Yeah.
Right, and it's one of those things, like, normally, no one thinks of that kind of thing. But it's here, it ties everything together and you're like, oh yeah, no, of course he would be, you know, adjusted with it. And the referee is then, you know, pouring water into Drew's eyes and covering him with a towel to try and, you know, get the brunt of it off. It all worked to put together a good story.
Oh, it just went down in perfection, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah. 100%.
And of course, as we pointed out, Karrion Kross sneaks out with the win. This is not over between the two of them, you guys.
No. And if Drew is able to pick up a win against Karrion, again, Karrion doesn't lose anything because he still looks like a goddamn, you know, final boss the way he should.
Yeah. With or without Scarlett. I have to admit that I enjoyed the entrance. Cross's ring entrance. You know, having her come out and slowly... very, very, subtly is not quite the right word, but she's lip syncing the lyrics to a song. And the more it plays, the more she gets into it and the more obvious it shows up. Then right at the end, she ducks off camera and he's there and is like, whoa.
Yeah. That camera shot when they hit the full beat of Fallen Prey with the red light and he just appears. That's part of that entrance that you lost initially.
I just and yeah, that was a thing of beauty to behold visually.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good. So there's that. So I'm looking forward to what they got planned up for these coming up, these two guys coming up in the near future. But now, kids, it's the ladder match.
Now and it's the ladder match. Wow.
What?
I said wow.
You're weird. That's all. You're just weird. Anyway, the only thing that pulled me out of this entire match from start to finish, the entire, at the end, Bianca's show of strength where she lifts up the ladder after being pinned underneath of it, was telegraphed. It would have been next to impossible not to, unfortunately.
It's, again, that was the announcers already telling you what happened before it happened.
You knew it was coming. Even if you had the sound off, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, so for the record, it's Bayley and Bianca for the Raw Women's Championship in a ladder match. Tim just said ladder match. Tell me what it is.
Bianca versus Bayley for the Women's Raw Championship.
Yeah,
oops. I'm rusty, okay? You usually do that.
And I was going to. I was ready to, and you just went, it's time for the ladder match, kids.
A ladder? Yeah, you threw me off because you said something smart-ass and went, wow, that's what it was. But right off the hop, you know, Bayley delivers. Trash talking cool before they even had a chance to play Bianca's ring entrance music.
Well, yeah, Bayley and Cole is, you know, the longest standing feud ever.
It's one of the best things about having Bayley come out. It's trash talking Cole.
I do have to say, nice tribute that Bayley had on her wrist. Again, very subtle, but also, you know, very poignant.
I missed that. What did I miss?
She had Sarah for Sarah Lee.
Oh,
on blue tape on her black wrist tape.
Yes, no, that was really good.
So
I did miss that.
I like, you know, they're hyping the fact that, you know, Bayley's been in a lot of first matches, and so this is the first actual ladder match for the women's title.
For the women's Raw title.
Yeah, they've had, you know, they've had like the tag ladder match. They have, of course, the women's Money in the Bank, but they haven't really had the Raw women's title for a ladder match. And so Bayley's able to, you know, kind of put her name with that, and they hyped up her accolades. But
didn't they have a ladder match for the SmackDown women's title?
No.
No, wow. they had a redo of the women's Money in the Bank on SmackDown after the whole James Ellsworth thing.
But for the
title, yeah, that doesn't count.
No, yeah,
they made it clear it was for the first time for the Raw or SmackDown Women's Championship that they've done a singles one-on-one ladder match.
But holy shit, Bianca's strength and athleticism is next level. Like, I want to say it was one of those where they did the kind of like the springboard, or I'm sorry, the where you put your feet under the shoulders and you kind of kip them up, and she just immediately lands and starts going up the ladder, and Bayley looks and is like, "Oh shit, that did not go as I planned."
Yeah. Yeah, the kip up to the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good spot.
I also like when they first get the ladder, after they do the dual cross bodies and they both get the ladders, Bayley gets hers, sets it up, and starts to go, and then she looks over and, like, Bianca has the taller ladder, and it's like, oh, I'm going to use that.
Maybe I should get up that one, yeah.
Clearly, I've made a poor decision.
Yeah, I should rethink what I'm doing.
It was nice to see, like, Bianca, like, constantly being like, oh, right, this is a ladder match. Let's do everything I can to get up the ladder as fast as possible right away.
Not the slow crawl that we normally see.
Yeah, I mean, that came later, but at least in the beginning, like, she spent a lot of time just being like, right, let's do something and try and end this as fast as possible.
Yeah, I have never appreciated people climbing up a ladder like they're in, you know, trying to crawl out of molasses at the beginning of the match.
No.
Or they're fighting five times gravity. It just never made sense to me in a ladder match to do that in the first half of the match. After you've beaten each other senseless, yeah, then do it.
Well, I mean, Tim, you have to spam, you know, the either A or X button to be able to climb that fast. So you just have to make sure that you hit it enough to start to go up the ladder at the appropriate rate.
Oh, yeah, see, now, well, hopefully the video games change that, too.
I'm going to just take that and I'm going to put it in my back pocket. So if I ever have a ladder match, I'm going to start climbing slowly. And then I'm just going to yell to everybody to hit the X button faster.
Just give someone a controller
by the
ring.
Hit the X button faster. Okay, you gotta hit the X button faster.
Okay, Brent, you're laughing because you're thinking this is funny. I'm laughing because I know for a fact, in case you will do this.
Oh no,
you will tell the crowd to hit the X button harder.
I'm laughing because I can visually see it and I want it.
Yeah. I know you can visually see it and want it. The point is, Casey's gonna do it.
You can also
he's not just beacon.
You can also
going to tell the fans at the Legion 1 downtown, smash the X button harder.
You also should get a controller and then try smashing it as you're going up the ladder.
Yeah, I mean, I need to go faster.
Here's the thing. I mean, if I'm ever in a ladder match, I will probably know well enough in advance to go find a busted controller at like a thrift store.
Thank you, Casey.
Like my button might be the X button.
And then
broken.
before I climb the ladder, I'll take it out of the bento box that I use because that will be a big. And I'll be like, and I'll try and hit the. I'll give it to somebody in the crowd. Be like, all right, hit the X button, and I'll start trying to climb.
Oh my god, I need a video of this. I need to watch this for WTR Riffs. We need to do this.
If it happens, we'll definitely do it.
Oh sweet,
yeah, Ishii.
Yeah,
whoever you're wrestling, whoever you're wrestling for, if you're booked for a ladder match, let me know.
I will, for sure. I will let everybody know on here. I'll be like, guys, it's happening.
Like, you tell me, because I will be down there with my camera.
Awesome.
Oh,
and
my God.
Just tell whoever, whichever show it is, just tell them that I'm with the press.
I mean, we get people to film our matches for us all the time. It won't be a problem.
There you go. But yeah, no, I want to be there to see it live and tape it myself.
Anyway.
I... I also have to say, I know it took them a little longer than they wanted to get to the spot, but the double KOD still just shows how just impressive Bianca is in terms of her strength.
Yes.
It took a tiny bit of maneuvering, but
well, yeah, damn. something like that with those three girls, that took a hell of a lot of finesse and coordination, and you can't take away the fact that it took extra to set that up for sure.
But I mean, even though it did, like, I thought they did a good job, like, selling it, right? Like, oh, yes, they were out of position. So then you see, oh, no. I'm going to fight to get up. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. No, I'm not.
Oh, overall, just stepping out of this one match and talking about the pay-per-view itself, this actually concerns several matches on the card last night. We have bitched and we have complained about wrestlers in previous recent years missing a spot or being unable to hit the spot that they've been like programmed to hit at that specific point in time. I noticed last night without exception, this happened like maybe three times, I think, last night, but they circled around back to it instead of trying to instead of a redo immediately.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think one of the biggest spots that came to mind for me was Liv tried to set the chair up between the second and top rope to throw Ronda into it.
Yep.
The chair fell, but she still pulled off the move and was able to send her into the pole, which...
Yep, that was even more effective.
Right, yeah. which still worked for that spot, but it wasn't a matter like she's had to stop and go and try and do the chair again. And I like Graves, he just dropped the little line in on commentary of like, yeah, sometimes furniture doesn't do what you want it to. And it's like, true, but it also shows the improvisation like you were talking about of like, okay, the chair moved. Well, there's a pole. Boom. All right.
Yep. But furniture doesn't react the way you want it to in a match. I mean, that was perfect. And we heard that.
I think even Bailey did that in the ladder match when the ladder just started bouncing down and she just looked at it like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yep.
But no, like the way that stuff is being run now, like you're talking about not dwelling on that spot and just having the booking, it really gives everything a different tone. And I think everyone's really enjoying it.
Well, I have to say the last three, premium live events, the last three of them have not to me come across as, well, I'm the biggest game in town. You're going to spend your money anyway. So go ahead and bitch. I don't care. It hasn't felt like that.
No. Well, they haven't overbooked the show the way we've seen before of like, you know, we're going to throw on 10 matches and then three of them are going to be like 2-3 minute fluff.
Well, it's not just that. It's not just that. How many pay-per-views from last year go back 10 years, how many pay-per-views or premium live events have we had to wait literally until the Friday before the card was all set and announced?
True.
Right? Nothing, no build-up, no nothing. This is what I'm talking about. Every single thing that happened last night, there was a build-up. There was a storyline. Something was at stake, not just the title.
Mm-hmm.
Every match mattered.
Well, I was going to say, there's only two matches that had titles associated with it, mm-hmm, of the six. So two-thirds of your card was just, these people are fighting because they really don't like each other. Here's their story. Here's why it's this match. Go. Yeah.
And here's the thing that people miss when they talk about the glory days of the Attitude Era. One of the biggest things that stick out is the rated T for teen or rated A for adult circumstances, situations, storylines, and such that you got with Attitude Era. But one thing that was very subtle that really, really hit home last night, every little thing matters. And I'm not talking about just okay, the Donnybrook, the Brawling Brutes and Imperium have a history, so let's do this. Liv and Ronda have built a history, so let's do this. No, it's Karrion Kross blinking his eyes and trying to get the pepper spray out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as one example, it's the little things. It's Bianca watching Bailey watching the ladder bounce. It's like, what the hell are you doing? It's Bailey going out to the side of the ring and purposefully breaking the supports off the ladder so she could have two halves.
Very true.
Right? It's little things like that. And it's because of that, it doesn't feel like, well, I've got your money, so shut up and watch it and go bitch on the internet later. It's all those little things.
So Bianca is still the champion.
She is deservedly so, but thank you, Bayley.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. If Bianca loses in her next defense, totally cool with it. She's had a good reign, but I think if you keep the belt on her, it doesn't hurt anything either.
Yeah, and I just think that we should take a moment to pause right now to remember Bayley's fingers.
Okay, up next is the I Quit match, Edge and Finn Balor. Go.
Someone is going to die from this match.
It is coming.
It is coming in the future, but there is a receipt to be had, and someone is going to pay for what happened.
Rock, was it last week or 2 weeks ago I talked to you about whether or not she was going to show up? Did I bring it up last week on the webcast?
I believe you did.
Is she going to show up? I bet you she does. I think now it's time just to drop the bomb and let everybody who doesn't know who we're talking about know who we're talking about.
Aunt Betty came home. So Edge at one point in this match was being assaulted by the entire Judgment Day. And when that happens, Ray came out to try and help him out. That didn't end up too well, thanks to his son. By the way, love Michael Cole calling Dominic every name under the sun in commentary.
Yeah.
While this is going on.
Well, I mean, that was the first time that Dominic really attacked Ray, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the first time he's actually laid hands on... Well, because he pie-faced Ray at SummerSlam.
Yeah, but that doesn't...
Doesn't count.
Well,
or,
that doesn't... I wouldn't say that doesn't count, but it was nowhere near the escalation that we got last night.
Yeah, no, this is the first time he has truly laid hands on Dad.
Yeah, this is the first time that he's thrown down, and... Here comes more of that subtlety. In the middle of Edge taking on Finn Balor, they're setting up the match we know is going to happen eventually, and that's Dominic versus Daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, this plan is the seed for that.
This was part of it, absolutely.
But so Ray tries to come out and help his you know former tag team partner and buddy for all those years,
Uncle Edge,
gets laid out thanks to the pole, and so they're all beating Edge up. Edge is handcuffed to the top rope thanks to Rhea Ripley, and she just can't take any more. Beth Phoenix shows up out of nowhere and waylays the entire Judgment Day.
Well, I mean, who do you think was holding the hockey stick in the back?
Yep.
But I just love the fact, like, you have that kind of like random appearance, but yeah, she just pops up and all of a sudden it's like, Damien,
you asked for this. You wanted this. You asked for this.
But just the look on the face of, like, Damien, Finn, and Dominic when they saw her is just like, oh, we fucked up.
And when so you get Damien to give a look like, oh, shit. That's got to, you know, that just sells how tough Beth is.
Yeah, he's 6 foot something. She's, you know, 5 something. And even he's just like, yeah, nope. I'm getting my ass beat.
Yep.
But yeah, she takes down the Judgment Day, uncuffs her husband, and then the things happen.
Oh, but not before the face-off that we all wanted to see.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ed's looking at Dominic.
No. I'm talking before
you're right.
Before
you're right.
Beth freed
Beth
Edge.
Beth and Rhea face-to-face, and everyone was like,
just the crowd reaction when they stood toe-to-toe.
Well, and that was the best part, is they let it sit for a beat.
They let it simmer.
Yeah,
yowie wowie!
You gave it that moment of just, yeah, look at each other, let everyone go, is this really happening? Is this happening? Boom! And everyone loses it.
Man.
Oh, so good.
I'm excited. I can't wait. And I hope that we get more than one, and I hope it happens soon.
Yeah.
Oh, something's going to happen!
Oh, yeah. They, like, the things that they did during this match to set up multiple things for the future. So good.
Well, here's the whole thing. You know, like, sure, the match itself was good between Edge and Balor. And they started it off perfectly. It's just the two of them. Nobody's around. The rest of the Judgment Day isn't out. Ray is not in Edge's corner. To the best of everybody's knowledge, Beth isn't even there, as far as anybody knew. It was just these two guys trading blows back and forth, doing whatever they could do it to get the other one to say, I quit. It was just great. Then the Judgment Day shows up.
Well, and when it comes to an I Quit match, my biggest problem with an I Quit match that normally happens is when it's always the referee going, Edge, are you going to quit?
Go to hell.
Right. With this, it was just the referee had the mic. And I mean, he would kind of put it near them and you'd still hear, you
get
know,
that thing out of my face.
Yeah, you'd hear the grunts, you'd hear the deep breathing, but it wasn't like every now and then you would get Finn after he pummeled the hell out of him going, yeah, ask him. That's how it should be. It shouldn't be the referee, you know, within the first 30 seconds going, hey, Edge, do you want to quit?
Yep. Yeah, they utilize that a lot better. And like, and I can't remember if it was Corey or Cole who mentioned, he's like, well, the only reason the ref is there is to hold that mic in front of their mouths.
Mm-hmm. That just adds to what I was saying earlier about the subtlety of everything and how everything matters and all of that. And it was perfect. Perfect it was.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
The way they finished this was, I think, like, as far as utilizing the stipulation of an I Quit match goes, I think this was the way to do it. Because in reality, if it wasn't for, you know, them setting up what they did, Edge, it's the only way to make Edge quit a match like that.
Is to threaten Beth. But here's what I was going to say. The end of this match, like the last 25%, was 100% setting up that match that we all want.
Oh, yeah.
With the finish basically all but confirming it. And then after Edge goes and says, I quit. Beth still gets cranked.
Which, like I said, it's one of those things. Rhea sets it up with the brass knucks knocking her out.
Yep. Oh, that was so smart.
Yeah, just boom, pops her. And you had the rest of the Judgment Day still there, because Edge, of course, is outnumbered. And all they do is hold him down. And it's the coup de grace. Coup de grace, setting him up. And then it's just holding him and making him watch. Which, as a fan, it's that anticipation that you know something is coming and you can't do anything about it.
Last chance, Edge. Say it. Last chance.
It's when you watch a movie and you see, you're like, I can see what's coming, but I can't stop this. Oh, God, yeah. This is even worse.
You can't look away from what you know is inevitable.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was just fantastic.
And when
whoever won or lost was secondary to what they did in this match.
And when Rhea still hit that concerto.
Yep.
She is now a heel on the next level, and it makes you just want to see her get, like I said, you're looking at this going, Rhea's going to die at some point.
Yep.
We don't know when, but it is coming. And when that moment hits, it's going to be Edge and Beth just looking at her being like, you did this. You know it. And there's just going to be that resignation of like, yep, it's my time.
Yeah, I did that.
Bam!
Yeah. It's like, Rhea, you may be one tough bitch, but that's Beth Phoenix, dummy.
Come over here, get your whooping. Okay.
And, you know, I initially joked about it last week of like, you know, I could see this group being in a war game style match.
I wouldn't hate that. Throw in AJ and it's perfect.
Oh, after, I think I 100%, yeah.
After last night, if you get those eight people and put them in war games, shut up and take my money. I am glued to the set to watch what happens.
But you've already got Ray hanging around the periphery. Now you've brought in Beth. You just have to work in AJ and the circle's complete.
And they've been working him in little by little too, because of the
subtly,
attacks.
Yeah.
The attacks on AJ and just Finn trying to be like, I wouldn't do this if I was your friend. And now AJ can see like, that's what you did to Edge and Beth. Oh, hell no. Like, comeuppance is coming, and I am part of this.
It just has you salivating for tomorrow night already.
So we'll see what the direction holds for them. Now we have a fight pit. Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle. Daniel Cormier, special ref.
Seth, you goddamn troll.
Oh, yeah.
You son of a bitch. Riddle just comes out in his good nature. He's bopping along to his song. The pigeons are let loose. Seth music's hit, and fucking Seth freaking Rollins with the thumb points in Philly. You goddamn asshole.
Thumb points and
I'm pretty
tights.
Sure that was some sort of like RVD homage gear too.
No, it was. If you look at it, it was spray
paint. Yeah, 100% was.
I don't know which one, but.
No, it, whatever it was, even up to the boots, he had like Rollins on the boots, like Van Damme had his ring. It was 100%. And that was the only thing that got spoiled was, what do you think of his gear? That was the only thing I got spoiled on.
Oh.
Oh, God. Speaking of that, the opening package of this pay-per-view.
Oh, man, yeah.
With Paul Heyman and the kid.
The kid at the spelling bee, and you just have Paul, and it's like, what is the word, or what is the origin of the word?
Philadelphia.
It's just like, oh my God.
Can you use the word in a sentence?
That was a very good opening. I enjoyed that.
It was.
We've talked so much about the fact that one of the strengths of WWE is their video department and being able to put packages like that. Even before this match, Ariel Helwani doing the narration of the fight pit.
It's credibility.
Right. It's Ariel Helwani is a big name in MMA. You have Daniel Cormier, one of the biggest names of UFC, as your referee. It made this feel like a legitimate big fight.
Yeah, it actually felt like 1995 cage fights.
Oh, God.
And now we found out why they went back to the old school ring posts.
So they could easily fit the fight pit in.
Or any cage. Have you noticed whenever they do a cage, it's the old
ring post? True. I like Seth's face. So he comes to the ring kind of gloating as RVD, and he's all kind of happy. The camera focused on him for just a tiny bit when the fight pit started to lower. And you saw him start to look around and go, oh, shit. And Matt's just standing there with a smile on his face.
You know, the only thing that would have made Seth's ring entrance absolute 100% gold is if they had mixed in the opening of RVD's WWE intro music.
Or if some annoying little referee came out with a whistle.
You just get Charles Robinson to come out blowing the whistle.
Okay, that one worked.
But yeah, this, I like the fact they emphasize no ring ropes. It's just going to be the cage and the top part. That's it.
And it was a fun fight between these two.
Oh, yeah.
I was, you know, it's Rollins and Riddle again. And then you find out, oh, shit, it's going to be the main event. No, wait a minute. Okay, I'm into it.
Yeah. Well, and like we talked about with other stuff, this one felt it wasn't a match. It was a fight that happened inside of there. And sure, were there some occasional moves? Absolutely. But it just felt more like two guys that are, yeah, put in a cage and just beat the hell out of each other. Go.
Two guys that want to fuck each other up.
And again, subtlety things. When Riddle got on top of Seth early and was grounding and pounding and Cormier was coming to pull him off and he threw that back elbow, Cormier just grabbed him and is just like, uh-uh, you don't get to do that to me. Yeah. And Riddle's just like, sorry, Daniel. My bad.
Well, yeah. both Riddle and Rollins had a chance to have a mini interaction with DC, so that was good.
Yeah, I thought they utilized him good, like in a way that, like, you know, obviously he got involved and was like, he let those guys know, be like, hey, you messed around, I'm gonna get you. And they're like, okay, it's all right. They each got their interaction. He called it down the middle, and they didn't overuse him.
Yep.
No. The one thing that was interesting that happened during the middle of the match, so if you had never seen a fight pit match, when Seth gets up there and they describe, like, okay, so he's up top, but the finish has to happen on the mat. So anything that happens up there, the match can't end yet.
They emphasized that so many times last night.
But it's like when Seth hits the stomp and Riddle is just laying there, it says, like, count him.
No,
I
he's
can't.
Like, I can't. It's gotta be
I can't
here.
See if he's up.
Riddle hits the RKO.
Oh, the way that Seth came back into the ring made sense, but was also a very clever way of how, like, okay, how do we get him back to the mat?
Yeah.
Okay, as he's falling, just grab that thing right there for a second. Really
quick. He kind of grabs the pole to straighten himself, and boom. Okay. Awesome.
Yep. Beautifully sold by the announce crew.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I really appreciate about Corey is if something needs to happen like that, he explains in the logical way how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, he may just trash talk his announcing partners till the cows come home, but he like balances that out by logically explaining why things happen in the ring.
Poor Byron.
not anymore.
Byron got bullied backstage, so
yeah, Byron got bullied back into Monday Night Raw. So here we go.
No, but Monday Night Raw backstage, not even on the commentary.
True,
anymore. He's backstage.
Very true.
He was on Raw.
And of course, finally, Riddle pulls off a major event win.
Dude, that senton.
Oh God.
And not so much like the senton, but his like reaction after he lands.
He kind of missed Rollins by a half inch, and I swear to God, he landed full out on his coccyx.
I don't know, but I like...
Which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, your coccyx is your tailbone. It wasn't a weird, funky name for a guy's part, in case you didn't know anatomy.
I was generally concerned just by the noises he was making that maybe he didn't land that the way he wanted to.
Yeah, I was going to say, the shoulders landed on Seth, and Seth, I think, was still regretting life choices, even though he didn't catch it all.
Yep.
But yeah, Riddle was sitting there after he hit that, was just like, oh God, that was a stupid decision.
And he got winded and broke a bone at the same time.
All
so
once.
Like, he's trying to scream in pain, but there was no air in his lungs to do so.
Yep.
And you just get that, oh!
And he didn't and even have to do it.
Yeah, Cormier's checking on him when he's trying to get up, and you can hear that he's literally in pain for real.
Just stall for a second, Daniel. Just stall.
Oh,
but
man,
but it was all I love the finish of Riddle's trying to hook in the triangle, and Seth is just banging him against the cage every which way to try and get him out of it,
and not letting go.
And Riddle just cinches it in, and Seth has no choice but to tap.
Yep, it's just fantastic.
It shows, like, you know, yeah, Riddle is legitimately able to pull off these moves. He's, you know, with him and Ronda, it's like, yeah, that's what they're trained to do. And so if someone's even banging them against Cage, it's like, no, I just need that split second of, okay, yep, foot's under the knee, locked in, night-night.
Well, you know, with Riddle's character and what he's developed in WWE, the regular person has a tendency to either not know or just forget about his training.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes out, it's like, oh shit, this guy knows what he's doing. I mean, he caught me, and I admitted it because I could not stand the character Riddle when he first debuted, all the way back. What was it, NXT? How long ago?
4 years ago.
I was going to say about 4 years ago now.
It's been about 4 years. Yeah. And I just never bought the character Riddle. And then all of a sudden, three matches hooked me, and the match he had against Roman Reigns sold me. I'm like, okay, I gotta like pay better attention to what's going on with him.
And look at this,
in the ring,
he main evented a premium live event, and it felt legit.
It did. It actually did. And so, yeah, was this a blow-off match, guys?
I think for something like this, it will be, because Seth is moving towards, I think, some other stuff. I think this is the right way. If you want to finish it, this can be a finish.
And you can come back to it later.
Right.
So basically it's a blow-off to the feud at this point in time. But just because you can consider last night a blow-off doesn't mean that it's over and done. So, yeah. And that was the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, guys. That was the entire match card. And we thank you for tuning in. Shut up! I'm talking! We thank you for tuning in to WTR Sunday Night to hear our review. And so we're done for the week. Have yourselves a great one, everybody. Rock, are we off the air?
Wild Talk Radio Network.
Are we off the air?
And clear. And clear?
Are we clear?
Clear.
Oh, God. This fucking ending. They orchestrated something over the past month that paid off in the most perfect way possible. The guy looks like a fucking rock star.
That's what I've been saying.
You saw the buzzer.
All the anthropomorphic puppets. Jesus. It worked
like burnt out ashes of remains.
It worked so well. Like, you see them, and they're so creepy. Because it's like, oh, the puppets themselves sure, they're puppets. They look kind of cute if you, you know, if you want to
describe
that.
Look in that corner. It's the Fiend. The roof blew off when they did that.
For the Fiend.
Yeah.
For a skinny Fiend.
And like, that guy needs to put on some weight.
And then the door.
Even before that, it was just, you've got the whole world in his hand song. That.
And the way it was sung, just very softly and very slowly, slow.
And like 3 octaves way too low.
Right. It's it's one thing if it was just played normal, everyone would still be excited. But it's like with it slow and drawn out, you're like, okay, is this happening? Is this just a tease again? Oh man,
he's here.
The ruins opens. Of the funhouse.
Yeah. Yeah,
everything covered in cobwebs,
and the buggered up music for the funhouse.
So on SmackDown, Hunter said there will come a time when you believe everything is finished, but that is the beginning, and this was the example. We all thought it was over until it's not, but they tied everything together perfectly.
They did, and I swear I could hear somebody's ovaries squeeing. All the way from Georgia.
She was live on Twitch talking about it.
But that eruption when his... So, like, you saw the lantern and people cheered. You saw a mask, people cheered. When the mask came off, I can't equate what that sound was like. I mean, I could probably say it was the same when Phil showed up in AEW.
I believe they call that a Road Warrior pop.
Whatever that was.
It was a rock star ovation. You set the tone with him. You told the story that needed to be told. Okay, here's everything that's happened, and here we are now. The fans were chanting for him. They chanted, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
He came out, they erupted. So much so, you couldn't even hear him talk for those words. Yeah,
you couldn't hear him drop the, I'm here. It was two words.
The microphone couldn't pick it up. And afterwards, they chanted, which no one heard because they were off the air. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Yeah, it was everything it needed to be to set the table for what's next.
And then some.
Gee, I wonder if people are going to tune in Monday night to see if someone makes an appearance now.
Oh, you think? Raw tomorrow night is going to have its biggest ratings pop in about 15 years.
Let's lower that. We're in Monday. We're in football season, so it may not be that high. Let's lower that a little bit.
Okay, but it's highest football season pop in 10 years.
We may get back up to where they were because it's the season premiere. You got DX, Roman, and Albury.
That's what I was going to touch. It's like you've got so. They're putting everything into the season premiere of Monday Night Raw. You have your 25th anniversary of DX. You've got Johnny and Austin finally having their match. You've got the U.S. title match with Seth and Bobby. And now, oh yeah, you've got the Bloodline making an appearance.
Yeah,
so
your world champion is on the show.
Yeah, your big faction with the world champion at center. And now you may have your returning, you know, rock star on that show. I think that's pretty loaded.
What kind of Bray Wyatt are we going to get this time around? Is it going to be a hybrid of his previous characters? Or have they gone back to the beginning? What?
They may incorporate, from just the look with the lantern and stuff, they may incorporate some stuff from early. But I agree with what Lindsay said. I think there's going to be new spins on this because I don't think that the person behind the character just wants to do what they've done before. This entire White Rabbit chase has screwed with your head, and we're going to take this forward.
How much input do you think Wyndham is going to be having this time around into his character?
Everything.
100%.
With him coming back, that's probably one of the conditions. Just like, just let me run my character. And
I think Triple H has given them carte blanche.
I was going to say, and I think Hunter trusts him enough to be like, you know what? I'll let you do you.
The guy they hired is here to help guide people like Bray in the right direction.
Yeah.
He this guy apparently pitched it before Bray was released, they're pitching ideas to do a movie based on the Fiend. So this guy knows what he's talking about and is ready to do the thing. Because the one thing Triple H said about Bray Wyatt is Bray, Wyndham, has so many ideas and well, we'll do this and this and this and this and this and this and this. he has trouble focusing and staying with the idea.
Well, it's almost like he's OCD. I mean, his brain operates on a totally different level.
So keeping him focused and contained and put in the right direction, you're going to be good, especially if he's able to be as creative as he wants to be. Wins and losses, that's not him. But creatively, he can get his direction and build his character the way and tell the story he wants to tell with it.
You're not gonna have a character that 100% all the time dominates and monopolizes the chase for a title.
It shouldn't, at least not yet.
I mean, he's gonna have, you know, like by all rights, he will carry at least one of the titles again.
Oh yeah, but now you're creating an environment where you're creating a bunch of talent and bringing them back into the fold that have legitimate shots of taking down Roman, and when Roman's gone, be in those positions with a Bray. Now they brought back Braun. There's a Cody Rhodes loom. All challengers for the world title. You got Kevin Owens being rebuilt.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins, Matt Riddle. You have enough talent there now.
Yeah, but the thing with Bray's returning and what I'm saying, he's not there to chase the title. We've got all these other guys, Cody in the wings, are retooling and rebuilding KO and, mm-hmm. and all this. You know, Drew is still there, and Drew versus Roman isn't done with yet. How many times were we miffed at their fumbling of Bray Wyatt when we all said that we could see a replacement for The Undertaker in Bray?
Vince McMahon's vision differed with what the vision that Wyndham saw of himself. It's clear. We've seen it. Every time you would go a direction, it would change as we went.
They would build him towards being that, you know, the enigma, the new phenom, if you will, the new nightmare. There you go, the new nightmare. And yeah, like you said, you know, thanks to Vince, for some reason, they absolutely always refused to pull that trigger. And they built that up for us. They gave us that expectation. Thanks a lot, Vince, you fucker. And took it away.
Because as we've learned, Vince butted heads with Bray. And that's why he was released. They butted heads enough that where he liked them for a minute, but then he would sour on them because Bray probably challenged him. And, you know, it's Vince. Sometimes he likes the challenge, sometimes he doesn't.
Well, we all know that for the longest time, Vince had it in his head that he would listen to his talent only to a certain point, and it didn't matter how much sense the talent made with their talking. Once Vince had enough, that was it. It's my way or the highway. I don't care if your idea is better than mine. I'm in charge. I'm the boss. Do what I say. And it just feels like we've finally broken free of that.
We're headed in that direction, yeah.
So
things are looking up.
We predicted this way back, even before Vince announced his retirement. You know, one of these days Triple H is going to be in charge and things, what you watch and the blah, blah, blah. And then sure enough, Vince retires and we're like, oh, Triple H has the reins. Oh, I bet you this will be interesting. Oh. And all of a sudden, WWE programming is becoming don't miss programming again. And it hasn't been like that for 15, 20 years.
Well, and here's one funny thing to ask about return of Bray. He still technically hasn't returned mainly on, like, WWE story. Because this took place, in theory, after the show.
No, read Twitter.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, it's funny that they kind of carried this to the very end of, like, it didn't happen during the main show.
Well,
I'm
not surprised it didn't happen. I was hoping it would happen during the main show, but I'm not surprised it didn't.
But I just like they carried it to the very end of, like, yeah, you saw the little name placard, as we all know, it's like, that's the end of the show, this is great! And then that's when they did the reveal.
So, under Hunter's regime now, two pay-per-views in a row, premium live events, we've had things happen after the show that you never thought you would expect. Last month it was singing. this month. It's the return of Bray.
It's making it so you watch till the very end.
Yeah, it's good. It's what Hunter did with NXT. It's the fade out, which Cole needs to work on the fade out. He talked a little too early.
Yeah.
You gotta let, like, the fade out happen.
Yeah, but you gotta remember, Vince is no longer in his ear.
No, I understand that, but no, it's the Hunter fade out, because he would teach the announcers down there, they would know when to, like, let the fade happen.
Yeah.
And just let, okay, now the moment's happening. But everything was probably timed, and he had to jump to just talk through it, but yeah. If he said, are we off the air yet? Like, we could have waited till, like, the got a little darker, but the moment it got darker, I said, are we off the air? Like, it was just something subtle like that.
So, now that officially was Extreme Rules, October the 8th, 2022. And, yeah, this pay-per-view gets an A from me.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
I don't think anyone would be like, yeah, I wasn't entertained by this show. And if you were, what happened to you as a child?
Yeah, if you hated this pay-per-view, your name's Evan Ginsberg. Some people know who that is, Rock. Don't worry about it.
I don't understand that reference.
No one gives a shit about him, Tim. Like, why do you keep bringing his name up?
Because it's kind of fun to take shots at him after reading some of his Facebook posts.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, wait. I think we have some housekeeping.
Yeah, housekeeping.
Go. We do have housekeeping, okay. Don't we, Brent?
Yeah, hang on just a second. Sorry, wanted to get that cough out. All right, so we have our pick'em, slightly less than normal, but still, we got pick'em. In seventh place, we have The Rack. Both Rock and Lindsay went 2-4.
Yay!
Whoa!
I mean, technically, Lindsay could have been 3-3 had she stayed with one of her answers, but she changed it at the very last second.
Yeah, I booked the show differently. Woo!
Remember high school, Lindsay, the multiple choice test. Your first guess is usually correct.
Well, on the show, she had originally picked Rhonda, but that was because she had seen the photo of Extreme Rules with Rhonda on there. She had meant to say Liv, and she changed the pick. But if she had picked Rhonda, she would have done better. So in sixth place, all alone, batting 500, is The Wheel.
The Wheel beat for him. Rock.
In third place, Casey, we have a problem.
What'd I do?
We tied with Sup at 4-2.
That's okay. I beat The Wheel.
But we didn't beat the Inanimate Objects.
Can't win them all.
Because we lost to the 8-Ball and Tim at 5-1.
Consider yourself bitch slapped, Brent.
So Tim and the 8-Ball went 5-1. Casey, myself and Subway went 4-2. The Wheel went 3-3, and Rock and Lindsay went 2-4.
Lindsay won all the things. She got the only thing she cared about.
I think we all got the thing we wanted ultimately with the way that finished.
So there you go.
Oh, which one did I get wrong again? Shit.
I just closed it. Gosh darn it.
I'll tell you which one I got wrong. The Donnybrook. I was sure that Imperium was going to win, but I got all the rest of them. So.
Actually, you're right. Yep, that was the one.
That was the only one I missed, and I'm like, I only picked Imperium because I like Imperium. Anyway, that's it for tonight's webcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We hope that you enjoyed Extreme Rules at least almost as much as we did, if not more so. Don't forget, we're not done completely 100% with anything because the new week kicks off tomorrow with the post show immediately following Raw.
We'll review the season premiere of Monday Night Raw, 11 p.m. Eastern.
There you go. And of course, Thursday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, another edition of the multi-time, multi-award winning The Rack Radio Show. You've heard her name throughout the webcast tonight, the absolutely lovely Lindsay Ward hosting, and she's got an anchor around her neck by the name of Rock to co-host with her.
The Rack is live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll review Extreme Rules, give you all the news and notes you can handle. It's The Rack, Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern.
I'm sorry, Rock. I was just teasing. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I should go play some Fortnite with my friends.
After those comments, do you have any?
Not in Philadelphia.
Fortnite with Friends returns Saturday night,
10:30, somewhere around there, when we get our shit together. Followed by CB Radio, midnight is CBRadioLive.com, GrandTheGreatDebate.com.
There you go. And yeah, anything happens this week that we need to talk about or want to talk about, you know, we're going to be back here next Sunday night at 8 o'clock Mountain, 10 o'clock Eastern for another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, the original, the innovator. Stay tuned to social medias this week to keep up with any news or and or updates concerning the website, plural, and any of the webcasts.
It's at Wild Talk Radio, Twitter, Facebook.com, just Wild Talk Radio Network. It's WTR Sunday Night on the Facebook and the Twitters.
There you go. Speaking about the Twitters, yeah, follow me at Flames Forums, at Flames Forums, plural. A whole bunch of stuff I'm talking about, not just one thing. So find out because, yeah, I'm pretty active on the Twitter. Not like Casey, but he's getting better.
I mean, I'm really active at retweeting about independent wrestling in my area.
Relatively speaking, yes, yeah. You are.
So you can find me on Twitter and sometimes Instagram at Kyle Driver. If you would like to engage in purchasing some merch, I have a online store through Redbubble, and you can find that link in the description of my Twitter and Instagram, which once again is Kyle Driver.
Purchase his merch. Purchase his merch. He deserves to have you buy his shit.
I mean, like, I don't know deserve, but I would very much appreciate it.
Well, you deserve it, man. I've known you long enough to say, yeah, you deserve it. You're unlike the intern who does post on Twitter once in a blue moon when he's not relegated to the corner.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Kane Kittens, and I just want to say, please go support Casey's merch so that he can get enough money to buy a controller to do what we talked about earlier today.
Yeah, it's going to happen, even if I have to give him one of mine. He's going to do it.
I understand. I really want this.
It would be kind of cool if you were able to purchase one that lights up so it, you know, stands up when he hands it to some a crowd member.
Maybe so. I'll try and find one of those, like, super old school NES mats, and I'll get someone to do the stompy thing like in the track and field game.
Like, just have just like run in place on the X button.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sweet. All right, that's it, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Have yourselves a great week. Don't forget, all month long, it's the Halloween edition of whatever we're streaming.
Wild Talk Radio Network.